Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst over at Oanda. Now Ed, looking at the markets today, I'm seeing a lot of red on the board. I'm not seeing really too many markets going through major declines here, but there does seem to be this general selling pressure to kick off the week. One market that we are not seeing selling pressure on continues to be the U.S. dollar, trading up today above 99 on the dollar index. Hasn't quite gotten to that 100 level here, but when you look at the dollar chart, really from the start of last year, 2021, and then even through this year, the dollar has been on a pretty strong uptrend. Okay, a lot of that can be due to geopolitical tensions. There is also the Fed starting to tighten, and there is generally this more defensive nature traders have. Ed, what do you think, though, about this pretty consistent rise in the dollar we've seen over the last year plus?
Well, it's fascinating because when you take a look at where Treasury yields have, you know, where they've come from, over the past, if we just go to the new year, you know, we were trading at 150 for the 10-year, and now we're at, you know, 245. And more specifically, since, you know, Fed Chair Powell, you know, went full hawk, we're seeing this kind of skyrocketing move with Treasury yields, which when you look at the curve, it's flattening. And it's really providing a big shift here into the dollar. And what's complicating, you know, some of the flows into the dollar is that we've been, I think over the last, you know, few months, we've been really focused on a lot of these commodity super cycles, the global shock that came from the war in Ukraine, and how we saw some really strong moves higher with oil prices, wheat, so many metals and whatnot. And now you're seeing some of that commodity move ease up a little bit. You're really just having a one-way trade into the dollar. And I think there's growth concerns for Europe. You're also seeing some weakness in China. So you're really going to have an interest rate differential that is going to be greatly in the dollar's favor. You know, first week of January, we're talking maybe 2 to 3 rate hikes. Now, all of a sudden this week, people are talking about a string of, you know, half point rate increases by the Fed at the next, you know, few meetings. So I think you're going from just a couple of rate hikes a year to maybe one a meeting. Now we're thinking to a bunch of supersized hikes. So the dollar is going to remain king. There's no way the European counterparts are going to be able to match that pace of tightening. So, you know, you're probably going to see that eventually. Yes, that's going to really hurt the U.S. economy, but the U.S. economy is still on solid footing, as Fed Chair Powell has reminded us multiple times over the past few weeks. And I think you're going to see that you're really having the dollar remain in a very attractive spot because emerging market currencies they're going to continue to weaken as the focus, you know, remains on U.S. yields. So it's a one-way trade right now. And I think that's why you're seeing so much dollar dominance.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about good old King Dollar, because we hear a lot of narrative since the Ukraine-Russia situation started up that there was going to be, you know, when they were removed from the SWIFT banking network, a lot of people thought they'd start working to accelerate a non-dollar-focused system with China, with some of the other nations that have sanctions. And there's also been some rumblings that Saudi Arabia was spearheading some movements to get off the petrodollar. And they've even announced recently they would trade with Russia in rubles. India would trade oil with Russia, they mentioned, and did, in rupees. And so there are other nations trying to, you know, come up with systems around using the U.S. dollar. But as you just mentioned, the interest rates are going up swiftly. The 10-year is at 2.46 as of this recording, and the 2-year is at 2.33. There's only a 0.13 bip spread between the 10 and the 2 right now, so it's really flat. You mentioned that that's what's keeping King Dollar in the crosshairs. Do you think as the Fed continues to hike further and further, that's just going to put more and more emphasis on the dollar as a store of value?
I think that trade is going to continue for a little bit longer. And I think once we start to invert, actually large parts of the curve have already inverted, but everyone's focused on the tens and twos. But when that inverts, I think you'll see that there will be probably what will be heavily, you know, knee deep in stagflation talk. and I think that you're going to see a lot will depend on the geopolitical risks. And I think there is still this firm optimism that this won't be a long war. And if it's not a long war, let's say this war does end in a few months or so, which is the base case for many traders, but I think it's still premature to say that, then you could see the rest of the world play a little bit of catch up, and you know King Dollar will struggle because everyone will become focused on the growth potential story for everyone else. But I think that the risks are going to remain elevated. And I think eventually, if we just become more risk averse and see sentiment completely to deteriorate because of where pricing pressures have taken us, then the dollar dominance is probably going to last us until the summer.
So Ed, how much of a war premium do you still think is in these markets? This war has been going on for a month now, and it's dominated the headlines, especially a few weeks ago, but recently it seems like the headlines are having less impact, which makes me think that maybe some of this war premium is no longer on the table. Simply traders have adjusted to these different, generally higher levels. Is that the case, or is that getting a little bit too far ahead of ourselves right now?
I think we're hearing it from a lot of people that's the case. I mean, even OPEC Plus, they've been resistant to overreact to what's happening with this Russia-Ukraine conflict. But I think we have to remind ourselves that there's too much uncertainty right now. And even when there's a breakthrough and there's a major de-escalation, these supply chain problems are not going to be rectified overnight. And I think that we're still going to see a lot of these price increases are going to remain sticky, and I think that the outlook is going to really be a lot difficult for a lot of businesses. I think you're going to be looking at a lot of companies that don't have preferred vendor relationships. They're going to really be struggling to keep up. So I think I anticipate that you're going to see that. A lot of traders are going to be focused on margins, valuations. I think that we're going to see more of a return to normal of analyzing companies. And right now, I think a good amount of Wall Street is kind of fixated on, like today, finances, energy, they're the biggest losers. But I think overall, there's this anticipation that, over the next year or two, you still could see them outperform just because of the risks to the outlook and what we could see with treasury yields. I think that those are probably going to remain strong, and consumer staples will be a key defensive play for many. And if you see heavily beaten up stocks that do have good growth potential, we'll probably see a lot of investors gravitate towards those. But I think everyone's going to be a little bit more selective, and this is going to be a very difficult environment to buy. This is no longer the buy the dip every time you see it type market.
Yeah, and it's a big contrast to what we've seen the last 2 years, where it seemed like any dip was bought, especially if it went down to that 50-day moving average. And it seemed like investors couldn't lose, that there was only one way the directions could go, and that was up. Same thing with real estate, same thing with bonds, same thing with everything. But we've now seen a complete flip-flop to where people are more selective. They are more defensive. We have seen big moves in the energy stocks and in the commodities. We have seen pretty good moves in the precious metals for the last few months. But one other area that people are getting defensive in, and it actually has rallied recently, is the cryptocurrency space. I know you follow that pretty closely. And so in the face of these tensions with the, not just the war in geopolitics, but also tensions in the banking system, tensions in, what is the new system going to be? A lot of people are still gravitating towards getting out of the fiat system and into the crypto markets. What do you make of this recent bounce, Ed?
It's fascinating to see how the cryptoverse embraced the idea that, wow, you could really see so many more countries become dependent on transacting in crypto just to ease up on that fiat currency risk. And I think that, if you're Russian, if you're Argentinian, you've seen massive, currency depreciations, and you're looking for other ways of transacting, and cryptos will provide that as an opportunity for a lot of people. And I think right now the big question mark is what's going to provide that long-term growth for crypto. You're seeing still consistent investments. There's this anticipation that you're going to see smart contracts become more used. But I think what's really, perplexing the market is that you had a good amount of investors that moved money onto the exchanges over the past month. And typically, you know, whenever we would see that, that would be right before, you know, a major sell-off. And you know, as crypto was, you know, maintaining a tight range, it looked like they were anticipating that this consolidation pattern was going to hold up. That did not happen. And I think when you consider the dollar dominance, which for a good part of, you know, the last few years, whenever the dollar was strong, that would, you know, really signal risk aversion. And that would be bad for a risky asset, which Bitcoin has predominantly been. But that's not the case right now. Right now, you're still seeing Bitcoin is performing well. And there's this kind of a scramble from institutional investors where there's a big pause here in the commodity trade. There's a lot of hesitancy into piling blindlessly into stocks. And cryptos are just another, you know, financial instrument that you can, you know, get exposure to. And it broke past 45,000 just the other day. And now you're seeing this breakout where with cryptos, you could see bullish momentum really, you know, provide a major move where, you know, we could technically see, you know, Bitcoin make a run towards 54,000 or even higher. So I think there's a big interest here in what's going to happen with crypto. And I think that the market is still firmly long-term bullish. And that's why whenever you see these key technical levels breached, you know, there's oftentimes a lot of momentum behind it. So it'll be interesting to see if Bitcoin can really, you know, hold above 45,000 significantly over the next couple of days. And if so, that could attract much more.
So, Ed, to your point about investors still maybe being a bit scared to blindly go into stocks, we have seen a rebound in stocks, and it does seem like Bitcoin does trade a little bit more, I think, with the broad averages. When investors are feeling more confident and when they're putting money to work in, let's say, more risky or I guess just more growth-type stocks in a sense, then, well, Bitcoin does better. So right now, even in the face of rate hikes, are you seeing a bit more rotation back into that more risk on? I know we started off this interview by saying that investors are taking a defensive nature. That is true today, but broadly, we have seen markets rebounded. That correlated also to Bitcoin rebounding.
Yeah, I think for some investors, they're viewing Bitcoin at these current levels as a defensive play, believe it or not. you know, when you take a look at what Bitcoin has done over the past year, you know, ever since it was proven that Bitcoin was not an inflation hedge, and you know, we tumbled from the near 70,000 level all the way down towards those low 30s. I think there's still this belief that you're probably going to see that Bitcoin has passed a lot of its key macro objections. There was, you know, that regulatory hurdle that many were fearing would mean the end of it, which is gone. There was that environmental concern, which it seems that some of these network upgrades have alleviated those concerns for now. And it appears that there's now proof that you're seeing some real world applications take place where you can see how corporate America is going to, you know, make sure that crypto is a part of their long-term plan. So it does seem like you're still seeing, you're not having major institutional investors say we're abandoning ship right now. And that's very bullish for Bitcoin. And I think that you're probably going to continue to see that as long as the big money still remains long-term committed, you probably still will have an upward trajectory here.
Well, Ed, just kind of taking a middle of the road stance between the comments you made and the comments Corey made, I would suggest that Bitcoin is seen as more of a defensive play because it has some of those attributes like gold, the scarcity, the fact that it's outside of the fiat system, that there's no third-party, counterparty risk. But the rest of the crypto space really isn't defensive. As you just pointed out, it's more of a use case. So whether you're looking at Ethereum or some of Ethereum's competitors like Solana or Polkadot, those other platforms are more use case based, like you mentioned on the smart contracts. So wouldn't those trade more like tech stocks, to Corey's point? So you have kind of a split between Bitcoin and then everything else, all the altcoins, and Bitcoin is defensive, but everything else does seem to correlate more toward the tech stock universe because of it actually has a use case and it has all those new platforms of technology that are being built upon it.
Yeah, and I think that you're probably going to see that, you know, the next few years, the focus is all going to be about the use case. And what's going to really provide, I think, momentum here for cryptos long term is that you're probably going to continue to see that you're having new projects come about, and the whole idea that I think with cryptos is that you're going to have a lot more companies become a lot more efficient. You're also going to have some companies that are going to use the blockchain technology, and some are going to create different opportunities. Like there's a crypto called Helium where they're going to have a decentralized wireless infrastructure. And as you see more projects grow like that, that's really going to fuel how you know this whole space is going to evolve and grow. So I think you're probably going to see that the race for just beating Ethereum is that'll probably still dominate the headlines, but you're going to see more new projects emerge, and that's what's going to, I think, make the focus go from just really like the top 10 or for some people the top 20 cryptocurrencies, is that you're going to have a wide range of, you know, 5-10 years down the road, you know, we might be covering, you know, like having like a crypto 100 where there's actually 100 coins where, you know, like maybe like 50 of them are specifically for some type of industry that provides a major shift on how businesses operated. It's fascinating because we don't know exactly how that's going to be. Things are going to constantly change, and that's probably what is so attractive of this. Because what we've talked about, you know, a year ago was maybe we're talking about more about Bored Apes and like sports memes type things and different NFTs that have been created, and now I think you're going to see that there's a lot of smart money that's being applied, and you'll probably see that the advantage with the blockchain is that it will help make things a lot more efficient, and that's probably why everyone's so bullish on it.
Yeah, we're still just waiting to see where blockchain fully gets integrated first, right? Because there do seem to be a lot of use cases for it, but none that have, I guess, fully caught on or completely changed a sector or a market yet. But again, there's a lot of money in that sector, and there's a lot of different avenues and coins that are, well, looking at, hopefully, I think, trying to help out some other sectors, plus also make some people some money. Been a bit tougher recently, though. Ed, we'll wrap it up here. Good chatting with you, buddy. It's a very different world this year, and hey, we're talking about very different things, which, hey, make for different moves in markets. Always good chatting with you, Ed. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll chat again next week.
Thank you for having me.